And right now, switching gears, we're going down south to Venezuela. We're very happy to be rejoined by our friend Steve Elner. Steve Elner has taught economic history at Venezuela's Universidad de Oriente since 1977, and he's the author of Rethinking Venezuela's Politics, Class Conflict, and the Chavez Phenomenon. Steve's recent article on the crisis in Venezuela is titled Showdown in Venezuela, What's at Stake in Debates About the Dialogue and Negotiation Between Chavistas and the Opposition in Venezuela. And that was published in the July edition of the NACLA report on the Americas. Steve, great to have you back on the program. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Good to be on the program, Scott.
Well, Steve, maybe before we get into the topic of this article and the current crisis in general, political and economic crisis in Venezuela, I'm wondering, from all the dire reports we read here in the United States, and I've spoken to friends who have family in Venezuela, it sounds like things are pretty tough there. And having been a longtime resident of Venezuela, I'm wondering, you know, from your own personal perspective, what can you tell us about the daily hardships? And, there's discussion about the high rates of inflation, the basic goods that are not available that people have to stand in line for, the collapse of the medical care system in Venezuela, the rising tide of violence across the country. A lot is said about Venezuela in deep, deep trouble. How has that impacted you?
Well, there's no question about it. It's really impacted the popular sectors more than the middle class, but everybody is impacted because of the shortage of goods and the criminal element as well. So the situation isn't good. There's no question about it. I would say that the reports that you get in the U.S. media, there may be some exaggerations, but the situation is dire, as you put it. But one thing that I can add is that very often there's an element that is inserted in the discussion which is highly exaggerated, and that is violation of human rights and democracy. There's a juxtaposition of two issues. One is the economic problems, and there's no question about it. The problems are very serious. But the other is that Venezuela is going down a non-democratic road, that there is violation of human rights and the like. That has had repercussions because the European Union passes resolutions condemning Venezuela. The OAS has considered the possibility of basically expelling Venezuela from the OAS. And if the rationale for doing that is just that that the government has implemented erroneous economic policies, that doesn't really hold. And so the economic problems are juxtaposed with other issues which are highly exaggerated or distorted.
Thank you for that, Steve. Tell us a little bit about the causes of this economic hardship for, as you said, most people in Venezuela are confronting these shortages, high rates of inflation, vital things like medical care are not doing at all well. There's a lot of ascribing the problems on one end to the collapse in the price of oil from 140 bucks a barrel to now, what is it, 40 bucks or under? What can you tell us about other causes that have triggered this economic crisis?
Scott, I would say that there are basically three factors at play, more or less equal weight. One, you mentioned the price of oil, which is just 30% of what it was in August of 2014 when it began to nosedive. And it's Venezuelan oil is down to $35 a barrel. It about a month ago it began increasing somewhat, about $10 worth, and that now there's a downturn again. So a country that is so dependent on the oil, as a matter of fact, you know, third world countries in general depended on their main commodities that they export, but oil exporters are more dependent on oil than, say, Chile is on copper or other countries on bananas or what have you. Oil dependence is greater, especially in the case of the OPEC countries. So that's one factor. A second factor, which the Chavez people mention a lot, they may exaggerate, but is definitely a factor, and that is that the private sector has, from the very beginning, has been opposed to Chavez. Even before Chavez was elected president, the Chamber of Commerce, FEDECOMERCE, opposed Chavez's candidacy and broke with its own tradition, going back to its founding in 1944, of non-involvement in political issues, at least overtly. And then in 2002, the FEDECOMERCE spearheaded the coup attempt against Chavez that actually overthrew Chavez for 2 days. And then shortly after that, about 7 or 8 months later, a general strike, which lasted two months, there was really a lockout. In which FEDECOMERCE, the FEDECOMERCE companies, closed their doors, and so the there is an economic war. Exactly the specifics are hard to document, but just to give you one example, Scott, Venezuela has paid off its debt religiously, in spite of the economic difficulties, in spite of the leftist rhetoric. Venezuela has been very diligent in paying off its debt, actually going back before Chavez. So Venezuela has a tradition of paying off its debt, more so than other countries. There are other countries which have failed to pay off the debt, and yet their rating is better than that of Venezuela. Venezuela is forced to pay higher interest on its loans because of the rating. The Chavista people talk about a financial boycott. That might be an exaggeration, but the fact of the matter is that there seems to be a discriminating treatment of Venezuela on the part of international finance. So that's the second factor. And the third factor is that the government has been slow to react. The Maduro government has failed to react quickly in a situation which really demands quick response and effective responses. Just to give you one example, Maduro stated about a year and a half ago that it would be necessary to increase the price of gasoline. Gasoline in Venezuela was, and perhaps still is, the cheapest in the world. And he said an increase is going to be necessary, but we're waiting for the appropriate moment to increase the price of gasoline. Well, he waited about a year to actually increase the price of gasoline. In an inflationary situation, that meant that the situation went from bad to worse. So I would say government policy and the slowness of government to react to the situation contributes to the economic difficulties.
You know, just a sidelight, there's a lot more to cover about the causes and fallout from the Venezuelan economic and political crisis that we'll get into. But I wanted to ask you about an article I read recently about an economic advisor to President Maduro of, the late Hugo Chavez's United Socialist Party of Venezuela, Maduro being the successor and elected president of Venezuela, now under the gun, and a recall effort is underway. But this article talked about this Spanish economist, Alfredo Serrano, and his advice to President Maduro. And a lot of fingers are being pointed to him for not following some tried and true, as they put it, more orthodox economic prescriptions to confront the crisis. So I know very little about Serrano and what he's telling the president, but what can you tell us about this advisor and what may be going right or wrong here?
Well, yeah, there are obviously tendencies, currents within the Chavista movement, and Serrano represents a more, some people would say, dogmatic line of thinking or more left-wing line of thinking. But the fact of the matter is that, The problem facing the currency, which has a lot to do with the shortages and the contraband and the hoarding, began right at the time when Chavez announced that he would be leaving Venezuela, and he died shortly after that. I'm talking about late 2012. He passed away in March of 2013. So during that period, the exchange rate, the dollar versus the bolivar, which is a Venezuelan currency, that exchange rate shot way up. Let's go back a little further in order to understand why these exchange controls were established in the first place. I realize that for the U.S. Audience, it's kind of difficult to really imagine that there is a fixed exchange rate, that the government sets the exchange rate. But here in Venezuela, that goes way back. That goes back to 1983. So it wasn't under a leftist government that the exchange rate system was established. But basically, following the general strike, there was the beginning of capital flight because of the fact that the economy wasn't producing anything for 2 months during that general strike in 2002-2003. So Chavez established these exchange rates, which meant that people who wanted to buy dollars in order to deposit them in U.S. banks or what have you, or buy real estate in Florida, they'd have to pay double. And so that's basically what happened. The official exchange rate, the exchange rate to import items, was set at a little over 4 bolivares to the dollar, and the unofficial exchange rate was between 8 and 9 bolivares, so it was like double. And that system worked fairly well up until 2012. In other words, between 2003 and 2012, there was a 2-to-1 ratio between the official exchange rate and the unofficial or black market exchange rate. When Chavez announced that he was leaving, and a lot of people felt that it was all over for him, and that in any case that there was a power vacuum because Maduro was kind of the acting president, but there was kind of a power vacuum as a result until the elections took place in April of 2013. So during that, 6 or 7 month period or 4 or 5 month period, the price of the dollar just skyrocketed. And once Maduro came in, it was a difficult situation to handle because any increase in the official exchange rate, once the unofficial exchange rate was up to 50 or 70 bolivares to the dollar, and the unofficial rate was at that point 6.3 bolivares to the dollar, any increase would have set off rampant inflation. And so Maduro was hesitant to increase the official exchange rate. And so you had this disparity, this very big disparity between official prices and unofficial prices. And as a result, you have a system in which you have administered prices, which are way below the market value of the prices, and that is a recipe for contraband. In other words, people will buy goods at the official rate, ship them off to Colombia, and sell them at 2 or 3 times higher the price. So that has created a problem of shortages. Now, there are different viewpoints. Serrano's viewpoint is that the government cannot eliminate this exchange rate because it will mean that prices will be so high that poor people just won't be able to buy any of the basic items that they need. So that's one position. Another position is that, eliminate the exchange rate or set the exchange rate pegged to the unofficial exchange rate so that there are different viewpoints here. Basically, in a nutshell, Maduro, over the last couple months, over the last, say, 3 months or so, has tried to create an in-between situation of not eliminating the exchange rates completely, but allowing for a new exchange rate that is close to the unofficial exchange rate. So that means, in effect, that you have less scarcities. And the problem of scarcity is still here in Venezuela. There's no question about it. But the situation has improved mildly over the last, you know, month. But on the other hand, as a result, prices are a lot higher. And people, that might favor the middle class because the middle class has more purchasing power, but it certainly hurts the popular sectors of the population.
And that's the very sector that Maduro, you know, and the Chavez movement had depended on for electoral wins, right?
That is exactly the case.
Yeah. Steve Elner is our guest, teaches economic history at Venezuela's Universidad de Oriente and has been in Venezuela in that position since 1977. He's the author of Rethinking Venezuela's Politics, and we're talking about his newest article in NACLA, the Report on the Americas publication. It's titled Showdown in Venezuela. And Steve, before we run out of time, I wanted to ask you, what is the debate now, both within the folks surrounding President Maduro of the Venezuelan United Socialist Party and the opposition, in terms of efforts to negotiate some kind of reconciliation to allow the country to move forward and solve some of these problems?
Right. The position of Maduro is let's sit down and negotiate. But without any conditions established. The position of the opposition, with the exception of you know, a few independent opposition people, is that we will only negotiate if the government accepts certain changes, and one of them is the liberation of prisoners who were jailed mostly during the violent period of 2014, the first half of the first about a four-month period in early 2014 of rampant violence and civil disobedience. There were several hundred people who were jailed, and during that period, there were six National Guardsmen who were killed. The opposition, you know, there were two sets of protests, the violent protests, which involved shootings and destruction of public property, and nonviolent protests. So the opposition is calling for the liberation of those people as a condition to sit down and talk. The position of Maduro is that we want to talk and negotiations are necessary because the opposition obviously represents a big segment of the population, perhaps 50%, but that the negotiation should not involve any conditions to begin with. So that's the difference between the two. Within the Chavista camp, there are some Chavistas, like the ex-vice president, José Vicente Rangel, who really emphasizes negotiations and calls on both sides to tone down their rhetoric. So that's a soft line current within the Chavista movement. But officially speaking, the Chavistas favor negotiations, but without any preconditions.
One question here comes up, and that is the opposition, since they gained a majority in the National Assembly, the National Legislature, in December 2015, has declared that they are looking for regime change, as you put it in your recent article. They are looking for a recall vote to replace President Maduro, the successor of Hugo Chavez and his socialist movement. What's the status of the recall effort? The opposition often says that the government is preventing a recall vote from going forward and placing all undue obstacles in its way. What's the situation as you read it?
Well, on the one hand, the opposition was at first divided as to which way to go. Once they won those elections for the National Assembly in December of last year, there were currents within the opposition that favored a hard line of, you know, pressuring the government into resigning And the president of the National Assembly, Henry Ramos, announced that Maduro would be out within four months, within a short period of time, he would be out. And obviously he wasn't thinking of recall, because the recall process would have taken much longer than that. And he was allied with the more radical fringe of the opposition movement, Voluntad Popular, which was not in favor of a recall. They wanted more immediate regime change. And so as a result, they didn't begin the process until about three months or four months after those elections. As a result, some of the Chavistas are saying that there isn't enough time this year, because the process is more complicated as a result of a change in the law following the recall election of Chavez back in 2004. The process is more complicated. And had the opposition begun immediately, they would have had time to do it this year, in other words, in 2016. According to some Chavistas, there isn't enough time to do it this year. And as a matter of fact, the initial stage involved collecting 1% of the signatures, 1% of the enrolled voters. And many of those signatures were fraudulent signatures. The government, the Chavistas demonstrated that there were 10,000 signatures of people who were deceased, for instance. And so that held up the process. If the recall is not held this year, then if it's held in 2017, then there won't be new elections after the recall. In other words, if Maduro gets recalled, he'll step down and the vice president will take over as president until the next elections, which are held in 2018. So that's really what's at play here, whether the recall will take place in 2016, thus allowing for new elections, or whether the recall would take place in 2017, in which case the opposition would not have a chance to take power until the following elections in 2018.
Steve, we only got a minute or so left, and I wondered, as you look at the situation now in Venezuela with both the economic and political crisis ongoing, what is your forecast here? I mean, you hear everything from, a collapse of the government, that Venezuela is a failed state, and maybe governments such as the U.S. or other regional powers should intervene in some way, or that this could devolve into some kind of more serious violence, like a civil war. What is your forecast for how this crisis will be resolved down the road?
Yeah. Well, firstly, the idea of a failed state, I think, is completely misleading. The government has taken measures recently, and these measures seem to point in the direction of mild success. I'm talking of the last month or so. The government has certainly acted, and the whole idea, the whole term failed state conjures up the idea of government violence, government repression, and that's not the case here in Venezuela. Comparing Venezuela with Libya, or comparing Venezuela with other Mideast countries or African countries, where you do have a situation of political violence, that's not the case with Venezuela at all. With regard to my prediction, I'd hate to make any prediction, but one factor that has to be brought into the picture, and that is that the opposition is very much discredited. There is kind of a vacuum, because the Chavistas have lost a certain amount of support. Some of their people have gone from pro-Chavez to skeptical. A lot of those people don't vote. And that's why the opposition was able to get such a high percentage of the vote in December of 2015, because the Chavistas, nearly 2 million Chavistas did not vote. So that's on the side of the Chavez people, but that hasn't been translated into popularity for the opposition. The opposition promised that if they won the National Assembly elections, that the lines would disappear outside of the stores. And that didn't happen. And as a result, people became skeptical because they voted, a lot of these people voted for the opposition, thinking that once the opposition took control of the National Assembly, these problems would be solved. So that there really is a erosion of support for both sides, and the opposition does not have the mobilization capacity. They got the votes in December, but they can't get people onto the streets like they did in 2002 at the time of the coup and the general strike. So I don't know. Your question about what prediction I have, I would say that anything's possible. But that just assuming that the situation will deteriorate and that there is no possibility that the government will be able to weather this difficult situation for the next 2 years until the next elections are held in 2018, I think that is one scenario that cannot be written off.
That the government won't survive, that somehow there will be what are you saying, though?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. I'm not predicting that. But on the other hand, I'm saying given the lack of popularity and lack of enthusiasm for the opposition, that it is possible that the government, especially if a lot depends on oil prices also. Oil prices. You know, now that they've gone down $10 more, the situation is much more difficult for the government. So there are a lot of unknown factors, and oil prices are one of those factors. But I'm just not discarding the possibility that the government will retain a certain amount of stability for the next 2 years until the next elections are held in 2018.
Well, Steve, we're out of time. Thank you so much for spending time with us tonight and explaining a very complex and difficult situation for the people of Venezuela and yourself living there and experiencing